Thank you for listening to the Data Is My Science podcast, the show that makes data your passion, with your host, Dapper Data.
All right, I have this question, right? I have this question about financial industry and the financial industry, and it's mainly because I'm doing my PhD right now, right? And I'm doing it in data science. And so when I look at what my topic is, right, what I'm trying to really focus in on is the way venture capitalists are using artificial intelligence tools right now, right? You know, and so we're thinking about like explainable AI, right? Being able to explain how you came up with this end goal or solution, right? You're trying to give money to somebody. And I truly believe there's a lot of bias, right? But the bias is not in the algorithm itself. It's not in that tool. It's in the data that actually is being fed into it, right? And so so my question is, you know, what artificial intelligence tools are they using in the financial industry that you have used or maybe that you know of that, and then, you know, what's your thoughts on this whole explainable AI, right? The bias of things.
Well, you're going to have to be very kind to me as someone totally ignorant and not a PhD candidate like yourself.
Oh, man. Area,
right? So you'll even need to really slow it down and tell me what is explainable AI one more time. And then I have some, I think, creative thoughts on artificial, like the oldest form of artificial intelligence. But first, take it from here. What is explainable? Explain it like I'm a first grader. What is explainable AI?
Okay. So, basically, say you think about the financial industry, right? You know, and you use a tool, right, as a venture capitalist, and you say, hey, look, you know, in order for you to get money from me, right, I'm a business. I go to this venture capitalist firm. I go to Mark Willis firm. I go there to you, and you're a venture capitalist. And you say, hey, look, you know, give me all your information. You give me your name, you know, basic information, right? Like metadata or something like that, right? You know, you give me your name, you know, you give me how much money you're bringing in and all that good stuff, right? You give me your ethnicity as well, right? You give me certain things, and then you run all that stuff through a tool, right? You're not necessarily making a decision, right? You're actually using that tool, right, to predict whether I can get money from you or not, right?
Got it.
So great. Okay, now I get denied, right? It's like, okay, man, why am I denied, right? You know, the tool not being able to explain that, it's an artificial intelligence tool. It can't explain like, well, you get denied because of this, right? You know, or that. And so being able to explain that, right? You know, I think that that's a huge issue in the industry, right? Not just the financial industry, but overall. Being able to sit there and explain that. You go to the court system and you're trying to explain why this tool made this decision, right? You know, why did insurance come about when you get into a car accident? You know, who was the person that did it, right? They're using AI to be able to make that decision.
Are you telling me for real that's serious, that they're using AI to determine who caused the wreck? I'm in.
Right.
That's like some Minority Report stuff, man. That's crazy. Yeah.
But in the financial industry, right, if you're loaning money out to somebody and you're using a tool, you know, the tool is only as good as the data that has been presented to the tool. So do you use any type of artificial intelligence tools to predict whether a person gets the opportunity to work with you or even predict anything within the financial industry that you know?
Oh, big time. Yeah. Well, listen, this is, first of all, thank you. Well said. I can tell when you know something so well, you can explain it to a first grader, myself, you know your stuff. So well done. That was great. Thank you for helping me there. And the answer is yes. I mean, we all are involved in the financial world, and there's all sorts of things, risk assessment, being eligible for a loan. For example, you brought up venture capital. You know, what about, you know, investing in a certain portfolio based on your risk tolerance? The robo advisors can reallocate as needed. There's personalized banking chatbots that can help you with things like you're checking your balance, scheduling your payments, that sort of thing. There's even underwriting decisions. And this is where I want to kind of take us way back. We're talking like thousands of years old AI, okay? Mm-hmm. So not like aliens dropped it down from the pyramids, but like what is artificial intelligence? Well, in many ways, and you tell me if I'm way off track here. Again, this mm-hmm. is an ignorant certified financial planner coming at it without the technology background like you've got. But the law of large numbers is where statistics is born, right? The law of large numbers says we can make interesting predictions when we have a large data set, okay? When we have a large enough pool. And what is the law of large numbers? Well, it's used every day in insurance. You know, mm-hmm. if you get 10,000 people mm-hmm. who are, how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
37.
Okay. So mm-hmm. maybe there are 37 year olds. And let's say there are 10,000 37 year olds in this data pool. And they don't know if it's going to be, you know, Dapper Data Bobby, or if it's going to be mm-hmm. Mark, or if it's going to be John or Susie or whoever. They don't know who's going to croak this year, but they know with absolute precision that, let's just say, 2.378 people are going to die out of 10,000 when they're 37 years old. And they can accurately price the insurance policy, the life insurance policy in this case, to that particular person and their age. And if they're a smoker, and if they've got liver issues, and if they've got, I don't know, a background with high cholesterol or something, then that's going to impact that price because they've got the law of large numbers. Is that bias? Yes. And there should be bias. I'm going to be a little controversial here, but if you're
I like that.
yeah. Well, think about it. When you chose your college you went to, I assume you were biased. You had a judgment on which school you wanted to go to. When you married whoever you married, I hope that person was, you were like biased toward that person.
Yeah.
And you chose them out of a large data set with certain, hopefully positive bias and so forth. And you know, I'm not saying that it's right or fair, but I think that there is an importance to having an indication that one thing is going to be have a certain outcome. Now, can you have unhealthy bias? Yes, you can, and there's plenty of that shown all over the news every single day. But if you're blind to all distinction, you know, that's going to end up being problematic for your business or your insurance company. If you run an insurance company and you just let anybody come on in, you know, come on in, and folks are walking in with their wheelchairs and with their inhalers in, you're going to be a very important charity to that community for about 2 seconds before you go bankrupt. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's as old as the pyramids. I mean, insurance and the law of large numbers has been around since the Roman Empire. Technically, I've seen annuity contracts and insurance contracts at the museums here in Chicago, because you know, these insurance pools, they'll pool the risk. That's what it is. They're pooling the risk, not knowing if it's going to just be one person's death or one person's investment loss, or if it's going to be everybody's. They want to make sure that they can pool that risk. And that's what insurance is at the very end of it all. Insurance is simply the transfer of risk from you to a larger pool. And so anyway, that's the oldest form, as I'm aware of it, the oldest form of large data sets helping us make informed decisions.
No. I mean, this is amazing, right? And you actually are introducing me to some stuff that I honestly have not even focused on, as far as the law of large numbers, right? You know, it's amazing to me that, you know, something going back that far has really been able to really make a great impact on some things like this, right? You know, and like to your point, right? You know, I mean, you made so many great points throughout that time, right? And I think about like credit scoring, right? You know, both the client and the financial institution, right? The clients can receive explanations that give them the information they need to improve their credit profile and stuff. I mean, is that bias or not? And what you said was very important, and is actually, it is controversial, but is you honestly, Mark, are probably the first person that has like ever been controversial when it comes down to that, right? And I love it because you're basically saying that, you know, your domain knowledge is important. I believe, right? You know, and as a data scientist coming from myself, when I look at like
if you're in the financial industry and you don't know anything about finance and you're feeding the data into the system and things like that, you know, then you probably will revert to maybe some bias scenario. Even if you're finance, your focus,
right,
you may revert to finance, you might revert to a bias scenario, you know.
Absolutely.
But is that good or bad? You know, it may or may not be good or bad. You know, certain biases are actually like probably good, right? You know,
you want to only pick the winners, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that is a bias, you might say. Now, the hard, tricky part is knowing what makes a winner. If you're a venture capitalist or if you're a bank and you're trying to figure out who to loan money to. And this is where things get really fuzzy, because there's, you know, certainly negative bias. There's stereotypes, there's racism, there's sexism, there's all sorts of that. Here's my hope and my prayer. And again, I'm certainly out of my depth here because I'm not a big data, you know, I'm not a loan officer. I'm certainly not an AI data specialist. That's your arena, man. So keep working hard to help us have a better world. But here's my hope. My hope is that if there is, let's just use one. Let's say racism is embedded into the data set. I really hope there isn't. But if there was, my hope is that somebody wouldn't use that data set and they would outperform the market because they would be working without that negative bias. My hope is, my prayer is that over time, negative, inappropriate, or unhelpful filters get filtered out, because the market itself is free enough from the constraints of having to find a certain filter to go after that gentleman who may have been denied a loan somewhere else, but he gets the loan from the folks that didn't use the wrong data set, didn't use the wrong AI, didn't use the wrong algorithm or whatever. And they give him that loan and they get a great return and he gets to start his great business or buy a house or whatever. So my hope is that we have a free, if we had one technology, one algorithm, where we all put all of our decisions through, I think we're in trouble. If we had 1,000 algorithms, and you know, like, if let's say one guy has a racism bias baked into the data, but then we go over here down the street to another AI data set that doesn't include that filter, and he gets through and he gets the appropriate venture capital he needs or whatever, and then they outperform the bad data set. I hope. That means that we won. We as a world, meaning that we as a world won, and we get rid of the negative filters, we get rid of the negative bias, and we keep, most importantly, we keep the real bias that we should have to keep the bad ideas from getting through. Like, I don't want an algorithm that accepts all ideas. Like, I could come to you and I could say, hey man, got this great new invention. It's a doorless microwave. What do you think? You know, just put your food in there, and sure, the x-rays might cook your brains, but it's a doorless microwave. What do you think? Should you invest in my company? I hope an algorithm would tell you to say no. But it shouldn't say no if I have a great idea and I just happen to be the wrong color skin or the wrong sex or whatever. That's stuff we need to get rid of, certainly. I hope I'm speaking, making sense here. What feedback?
You're absolutely making sense, man. And, you know, honestly, like, the bias, right? It could be gender or race, right? But it doesn't even have to be, right? It could be like, you know, whether somebody has, you know, left-handed versus right-handed, or something like that. And I think that, you know, like when you're looking into an algorithm, where you're looking into AI as a whole, you know, I think that majority of them are going to be biased, but it's not their fault. Right. It's not the person who's saying, look, I took this tool and then the tool used this data set. Right. It's not that person's fault. Right. And honestly, it's not even a person's fault who decided to say, I'm going to use this data set and then putting it in. Right. Unless they literally created their own, manually typed in and created their own data set. Right. Then now the ownership is on you, right? You know, as far as who is the person who, the domain owner, I'm in the financial industry and I decide to create a data set, right? Of a million people, I do a survey, right? And I'm just collecting all this data and stuff, but maybe I only survey people that was left-handed, right? Versus right-handed. And, you know, that's not good, right? So you have to really educate yourself on the data set that you are putting in, that you're creating, right, from scratch, right? I can create a tool right now and I can just download a cool data set that's out there in the financial industry. And I mean, I'm doing the whole venture capitalist thing with my PhD, right? And I'm looking at angel investors, venture capitalists, things like that, and saying, man, it's like my whole thing, you know, to be frank, is about the lack of funding for African American entrepreneurs, right? You know, and so I'm sitting there, I'm like, man, you know, who really created these data sets, right? It's so many hands that could be in the pot, like, of that. Right. You know,
right.
So you don't blame, you know, anybody really. It's just like, you know, just being, it's all about awareness and being cognizant of like, okay, I am using a tool that is out there that could make a decision that can impact somebody's business or career. Right. You know, and so maybe the education should come from the people like you, right? Like you have the influence to say, look, I'm using this great tool to make a decision. What are you guys using as a data set to put into this tool? Because I'm telling my clients right now that they need to go this way versus this way. Well, for some reason, I'm having an issue with this person, right? This person came to me and said, why did I not get accepted into your clientele, right? You know,
well, I can totally agree with what you're saying, man. And we spoke before we hit record. I've been playing around with ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. It's a tongue twister even to say for me, but, I've noticed because I type in, and anyone who's listening, try it and then type in something that you know a lot about. Like if you're maybe you're a full-time chef, type in, you know, how do you make the best souffle or whatever, and notice the bias. You'll see it. You'll see it. Mm-hmm. I noticed a lot of incorrect answers and it was just making stuff up. And so I totally agree with you. I think there's a lot of hands and sometimes it's like the Ouija board. Remember that game? The Ouija board?
Yeah.
When too many hands are on, you're like, who's moving it? Who's moving it?
Yeah.
So I'm with you on that, man. Yeah. Well, so what do you think is the answer?
I think that we just need to put more pressure on the people that are creating the data sets. I feel like that's the only way to do it. The domain owner, right? The person that sits there, whether they're in the financial industry, the healthcare industry, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, the person that's sitting there creating that spreadsheet or collecting certain amounts of data into a database, right? They have control over what data goes into the database, right? They have control over the columns and rows that are there. And that's important to understand, you know, when you have that, the average person doesn't understand how much control you have over creating that that initial database that everybody uses, right? Sure. You know, that CSV file, right? It's like, oh, it's just an Excel spreadsheet and download it. It has all these columns and rows and everything. And it's smooth. It's great, you know. But there's more data to be collected a lot of times, right? In the financial industry, I'm sure that there's data sets I can download where, you know, some columns and rows might not mean anything to anybody, right? Mm-hmm. So I can remove them or I can bring in another data set where I combine those columns and rows together and then they actually create magic, you know?
Right.
And so it's important to really understand what you're collecting, you know, really understanding whether there's bias or not in what you're collecting. And I mean, we look back at like autonomous vehicles, right? You know, I mean, a person that's sitting there, they had a big thing about autonomous vehicles and the person that was sitting there actually got hit by a car, right? But it was of a certain race and stuff. Well, the data that was in the data set did not include that race more than they included another race, right? And so, it was going to hit this person because it didn't recognize like, oh man, this was actually a human being because of the ethnicity or the race of the person. I mean, those type of things are important, right? So in the financial industry, I think that it's really important to look at the person who's initially creating that data set. If I use a tool out there, you know, to be less biased or to be very efficient and accurate with my tool that I'm using, I need to check the background of that person that did it, right? You know, and also another way to do it is when you are creating something great, you're saying, hey, like, I want to create this tool that is amazing, that's making financial decisions for an individual, then everybody who are the main owners and actually putting data into this into this algorithm, right, or creating these data sets, let them be more like versatile, right? You know, let them be like, you know, collect data from about 100 or plus different people, right? You know, ethnicity, left-handed, right-handed, you know, anything, right? You know, maybe they're more, you know, even getting down to the background of the person sometimes, right? You know, you almost have to collect data on the people that are actually putting in the data into the system, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think those are ways to do it. You know, what about you? What you
think? Love it. No, I totally agree. And what a story about the car and the data set that was collected there. I think that's proof that your point is real, that we need to put pressure on those and really force excellence for mm-hmm. those who are collecting and inputting the data. I'll also say this, and this is just extra credit, you know, feel free to ignore or disagree with this, but let's do internal pressure and external market pressure. So let's just imagine, for example, let's get rid of the AI for a second and just say that there are two businesses in town. Both of them sell a widget, whatever mm-hmm. they sell a widget. One guy who runs his business hates people with right hands, like who are mm-hmm. right-handed. Let's say he hates right-handed people. He only works with left-handed people, and he has a fierce filter on his data set mm-hmm. of who's going to come in that door and be a customer of his. He only works with left-handed people. The other business in town that sells the same widget, mm-hmm. anybody come on in. You're all my customers. Which one do you think is ultimately right. going to be successful? Probably the one with the larger data set, right? The more complete yeah. data set. So my hope is, again, here's my prayer. I hope that if there was another car company, let's say, that was using a better data set mm-hmm. that didn't include, like if I have the choice, I'm a buyer now, I'm going to buy a car. An AI mm-hmm. car, autonomous car. And I know mm-hmm. that this company over here has had a history of using improper data sets that ignore certain populations of certain races. Mm-hmm. Or I can go buy, and that puts me at a liability. Good night. I don't want to buy that car. Right. I'm going to give my money to the car company that did a better job with a better data set and won't ignore certain population groups and make sure that everybody on the road stays safe. I'm going to put my dollars, I'm going to market vote with this other company over here. And hopefully this other one goes out of business over time and more market share, more price, more, you know, dollars flow to the better algorithms, the better data sets. So my hope is, again, I'm just putting my hope on the market here, that mm-hmm. in addition to internal pressure, which is absolutely important, what you said is absolutely important, let's also vote with our dollars. You know, let's go get the right data sets with our dollars. We have a choice of what car to buy. We have a choice of what store to, you know, buy our widgets from. Go to the right places with all of our dollars.
Oh, great point, Mark. You know, so as we know, the audience knows, I like to leave a summarization, you know, a dope nugget or gem that I call it, at the end of the podcast, man. And what you have done is really help us understand that specific domain, right? And financial industry. I mean, you've given us so many nuggets, you know, within the financial industry, and it's amazing, right? Growth in the market, and then understanding how data is used to help a lot of people make better decisions, you know, throughout their time in the financial industry. And so when I look at data-driven finance, right? And, you know, it's not just about running the numbers, you know, more efficiently through standardization, right? Simplification, rationalization, whatever you want to say, right? You know, it's yeah. not about that, right? It's about optimizing business performance through broader and deeper visibility, right? Into your operations, being more insightful, giving more insightful analysis, you know, more rigorous fact-based decision-making is important, you know, because you can tell you actually study the game, right? You study it, right? You study it to the team, because somebody can ask you a question about finance and you have an opinion on it based off of the knowledge that you study, you know? So I advise everybody to really study their craft, study their domain, and you know, staying humble is key, right? When looking at data, because it's important to understand that you have to fact check your data but also being able to understand what you're looking at, you know, I think is important, you know, so being able to really do that research and not really believe everything you say or anybody says, right? You know, everything right. we said on podcast is great, but fact check it.
Right? Definitely.
Yeah. So yeah. Anything you want to leave with the audience?
Well, I'll try to do this in 3 minutes or less, but uh-huh. this is an idea that I've been having lately. You remember the game on The Price is Right? It's called the Plinko board. You know this game?
I was just watching that.
You're just watching that?
Me and my wife were just watching that.
Oh, nice. That show's still so much fun, you know?
It is.
So the Plinko board is like you take this chip and it kind of bounces on several pegs as it goes down the uh-huh. board. And you hope it lands in the right spot and you win a, you know, prize if it lands at the right spot at the bottom of the board. And I want us to think about our financial life sort of like that Plinko chip. Mm-hmm. We're one little chip floating down. We don't know if today's going to be a good day or a bad day. Mm-hmm. We might get a pay raise or we might lose our job. We might get disabled or we might win the lottery. You know, the list of who knows goes on and on. And as you said, we got to stay humble. The only thing I know for sure is that I don't know.
Yeah.
And the Plinko goes down that board. Now, here's the thing. The stock market and most typical financial advisors use something called Monte Carlo, mm-hmm. Which is, again, taking 1,000 different scenarios of how the market might do over your mm-hmm. retirement. And then they say, hey, you know what? You've got an 85% chance that you're going to be fine and not run out of money, according to my Monte Carlo simulations. And that's using a large data set, right? But here's the problem. You personally are not a large data set. We are one Plinko chip. And so you might be 2 or 3 standard deviations away from the average here. And you might mm-hmm. be the wrong chip that lands over on the wrong side of that Plinko board. And you cannot unwind those market returns. You can't like go get the money back, you know, when you lost it last year, like many of folks who weren't clients of mine last year came to me saying, Mark, I lost 35% of my life savings in 2022. Mm-hmm. So the point I guess I'm saying is rely on the power of large numbers. Insurance mm-hmm. contracts, like an annuity, for example, allows us to live with a guarantee lifetime income that mm-hmm. relies on the power of the law of large numbers. I'm not picking on annuities in particular, but it's just an interesting tool that's been around for thousands of years that makes sure it actually guarantees that we will never run out of money. We don't have to be one little Plinko chip. We can be the entire we can own the Plinko board, Bobby. Mm. So that's my concept I want to leave folks with. Check out not the old fashioned stuff, but look at modernized, efficient annuities that give you a stream of income that you can never outlive. Use and rely on mortality credits, actuarial science, the law of large numbers. Annuities are a street. It's like a private pension to yourself. So that's mm-hmm. a little gem, a little nugget folks can go research.
Man, that's amazing, Mark. You know, a lot of people don't understand some of the background that you just said, right? Understanding large numbers, right? The law of large numbers, right? You know, and how impactful that is in whatever industry that you decide to deal with, you know, that's important. And even some of the other stuff, right? Like the mortality portion, right? You know, it's mm-hmm. funny because I actually had a conversation with a data scientist that did the mortality rate based off of like COVID and stuff like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they use certain data and stuff throughout that time. And so I'm assuming, I didn't even think about it, how people in the financial industry, whether it's life insurance, whatever it is, right? They're using certain tools too for that type of thing to make predictive analysis on it, right? You talk about life insurance and stuff, man. So, you know, I mean, what you have dropped is a lot of gems in one session, you know, and I think that's amazing, man, you know. So thank you for doing that. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. I know I've shared quite a bit, but can I show this visual? Because it's just so powerful. Is you got an extra second? You mind?
Let's do it.
Real quick on this, I promise. Let me see.
Yeah, you know I love your visuals, man.
Okay. Yeah, you know hopefully not taking up too much time here. I'm just going to share my screen for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an example of what I was just talking about. So we've been talking about the Plinko board. Mm-hmm. And what we're looking at here is something called a Galton board. Okay. At the top here, you can see this big funnel of little Plinko chips. mm-hmm. notice the chaos. Look at all the chaos happen. That's our life right there, man.
Yeah.
You know, good days, bad days, everything else. But if you have the law of large numbers working in your favor, if you own the whole board, then look at the beautiful symmetry and the predictability mm-hmm. that happens, man, at the bottom of that board.
It can fall either way, right? It's almost like
one little chip can fall anywhere they want, but over the course of the entire this is again called a Galton board. Check this out online, Galton, Galton mm-hmm. board. It uses a large data set, but creates a beautiful predictive, every time you spin this thing, it lands in the same way. More balls will land in the center, fewer will land on the outside. And too many people are holding on to one little Plinko chip and they don't know where they're going to end up. Maybe they're successful, maybe they're not. But if you own the whole board and you can run this entire experiment like this, then your financial outcome is guaranteed, literally guaranteed, because it happens every time. So that's my little tip.
It's amazing just looking at that board right itself. Even if you like spent some years falling to the left, right? Let's say the left was bad, right? Eventually, it's actually going to fall over to the right, right? Mm-hmm. You know, where it's going to fall in your favor and stuff, you know? And the odds of it always falling to the left are probably like slim to none, right? You know,
right?
If you think about it,
right?
From the middle to the right or left, you know, it's going to just fall certain ways. I mean, that's life right there, what you just presented.
So true. Well, if all we are is one little chip, we feel like we're out of control. And most of the clients that come to me feel like they're just kind of getting beat up by the markets, getting beat up by their life events. Mm. You know, they lost their job, they got disabled, their mom is getting sick, their kids need help, you know, whatever. Inflation is too high and markets are too low. But when you own the whole board, every chip is yours. You're not just one little chip floating down the gutter of life. You own the whole thing, and you know with absolute certainty what your outcome is going to be before you even begin. So anyway, you're doing a great job, man. I'll hush and give the ball back to you.
No. Thank you, man. This has been amazing. I really appreciate this. What you have done, you have really shed a lot of light on the financial industry and being able to figure out ways to really think differently, right? You know, that growth mindset, you know, and understanding like how you could think differently within the industry is amazing. So I want to play a game, right? I call it overrated, underrated. And I got it from Gary V, right? A mentor of mine and everything. And this game, right? I really want to be able to display to everybody that we geek it out a lot, but that's not all we think about, right? You know, we do have opinions about some fun stuff sometimes, right? We have opinions about cheese, right? You know, we do have opinions about ice cream, right? We have opinions about all kinds of different things. So I want to play a game. Basically, I give you a series of topics. You get to decide whether you think it's overrated, underrated, or right where it needs to be. You can elaborate on it if you want. If you don't, we can move on to the next one. So it's about 5 to 7 different topics and stuff. You know, are you ready to play?
Let's do it.
All right. Okay. Chicago style deep dish.
Ooh, it's underrated. Especially if you're from, that city to the east of us known as New York. Yeah. The deep dish pizza, man. I'm telling you, there's nothing like it in the world. Come on back home to Chicago, guys, and get you some deep dish.
Are you being biased?
Maybe a little bit. Yeah. The filters are all off whack. You know, I live right outside of Chicago. So, yeah.
Oh, man.
You can't all do right, more than about a slice of that thing, though. It's heavy stuff.
They're heavy, man. You know, I've been to Chicago. I would say that. Me and the missus, man, we went to Chicago. I absolutely love it. I said that has to be a year trip, right? It's an hour and some change away from where I'm at in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. And we went there, right? We heard some beautiful music, right? You don't even know most people, right, that I talk to. Maybe they're just ignorant, right? You know, maybe it's people the circle or hang around. I don't know. But they didn't even know there was a beach right next to it. Just thinking about the beach that's there, right? You know, people don't think. They think when you think Chicago, you think Wendy's, you think cold, right? Cold. That's all you think about, right?
We call it the third coast. I think it's a pretty pathetic third coast when you compare it to the beautiful eastern or western seaboard, but it's still a great town. I love it.
Mm-hmm. All right, jazz music.
Oh, definitely underrated. I listened to a bunch of it this morning. I'm constantly finding new incredible artists, and I listen to the playlists and so try to keep up with, you know, everything like bebop and you know, the crooners jazz. But I'm a big fan of the old school, like just classic, just keep my brain in motion kind of jazz. I love it. It's one of my favorites. What about you?
No, absolutely. I love jazz music, right? I love to be able to, vibe out, right? You know, that's something that like being in peace, right? It actually creates that peaceful like symmetry, you know, for me. And I honestly love it. You know, I mean,
yeah.
My wife was talking about how I am. I love different genres. You know, but she hears me sometimes just listening to jazz music, and she loves it, right? Because she knows that that's a moment of where I'm at peace and relaxation. You know,
so and good. So,
yeah, man, I love it.
Get some Harlem Stride. Some Afro. Man. You know, just make the jazz piano get out there and explore. It's beautiful.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so skyscrapers.
I think they're overrated, candidly. I mean, the Willis Tower has got my namesake, but other than that, I'm a fan when I get to go up there, but you live in one of those things, you're wobbling back and forth, not a huge fan.
So, yeah, I, when I went to Chicago, right, you already know the one. What is the name of that place in Chicago where you're like over top of, I mean, I forgot, it's a huge, like, building. Mm-hmm. It's a huge building. Yep. And you're sitting there, you can look down and you're actually thinking, oh crap, I may fall.
Yeah. There's a glass overhang where you can stand on glass and you're looking straight down below you to your death. Yeah, that's the Willis Tower. It used to be called the Sears Tower, but they
have
changed
you done
the
it?
Name. Yeah. It's a thrilling experience for sure.
Yeah. I might need a couple of cocktails before I do that. You know, but I did it, you know, and me and my wife did it. It was fun. It was a great experience. But I definitely didn't pay attention because I was a little nice during the time, you know, so help me out, you know.
Well, if you're ever back in Chicago, I'll give you a tip or give your audience a tip. Instead of paying like $35 to go to the very top of the Sears Tower or Willis Tower, go to the John Hancock Tower, which is almost as tall. Mm-hmm. And you can go up to their rooftop bar and order yourself a, you know, soda or pop or whatever you want to call it for a dollar or two. Just a buck or two, and you can stand there and look out as about as high as the Willis Tower, but for only a buck or two. So,
man. Yeah, definitely. Thanks for the tip, man. You know, all right. Parenting.
Say again.
Parenting.
Parenting. Like being a parent. Yeah. Oh, parenting. Yeah. Oh, man. I'd say it's underrated, especially in our culture today. I find it to be very rewarding, very satisfying. And I'm learning more about myself and I'm learning more about human nature. You know, whether it's a good day or a bad day, to see my little girl grow up is one of the best, most rewarding experiences I've ever had.
Amazing. Yeah. I have a girl now, man. Yeah. She's the only girl, right, amongst all the boys and stuff.
Wow.
And I tell you right now, I mean, I am in awe, right? I don't even know how to explain it, right? Yeah. You know, having a girl is just so different to me, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love it. You know, she smiles at me. It's like you're smiling. It's different from the boys, right? You know, you only have a little girl.
Just one little girl, but I grew up with brothers, so I know what it feels like.
Yeah. I mean, I sit there and I'm like, man, having a girl, right? You know, she's growing up. You know, she's thinking certain ways, but just when you come home. Or when you're home and then she hasn't seen you for like a minute or an hour and then she's awoke, right? Maybe she was asleep and then now she woke up and then she's like looking at dad and it's a different feeling, you know?
Yep. I don't know how long it's going to be where she still thinks we're superheroes, man, but I hope it lasts. Yeah.
I know, right? But then we definitely have to exercise and try to keep ourselves healthy because, you know, or maybe even just have shotguns in the hallway or something ready to go, man, because it's different, right? You know, when grow older, I'm like, oh my goodness, am I going to be prepared, right? You know, the first time she says, Dad, I like somebody. What?
I want you to meet somebody. Dot, dot, dot. Yeah. Oh boy. Yep. That's right. That's awesome, man. Yeah, totally underrated. Anybody listening, definitely give it a shot. Five stars. Highly recommend. Man.
Yeah. All right. Ice cream.
Oh, man. Yeah. Underrated. I can't imagine. You know, like I was going to say, like, I love ice cream. I love my six. I wish I had a six pack of abs. And I love ice cream, and I love them both at the same time, but they don't seem to want to work together very much.
So what's your favorite ice cream?
I love butter pecan. I love. I'm a huge fan. Are you like old school?
That's my favorite ice cream. Yeah, right?
It's legit butter pecan, man. Butter and pecan. Oh, I only butter. I mean, on my pecans, you know, even without the ice cream, you know, it's just delicious.
I mean, how can you not like butter pecan? I mean, right. I have some people that actually say, man, they do not like butter pecan. You know, I'm like, what's wrong with you? There's so many.
I mean, you know, on Mondays I'll take my butter pecan. On Tuesdays I'll try, you know, like cookie dough. On Wednesdays, just give me ice cream, and I'll be happy. You know.
Yeah. All right, last one, Harry Potter.
Oh man, that's kind of delicate right now. There's a lot of news on Twitch about their recent video game, but.
I didn't even know that.
Well, I don't know. I don't keep up with it too much. I'm not on Twitch at all, but I would say it's overrated. And here's why. Mm-hmm. I think it's sold plenty of books. I think it's sold plenty of movies. It's had its time. All right. Mm-hmm. It's a good book. I didn't really get through all of them, to be candid with you. I got through the first three or four. And I was
It allows creativity, man. It was so creative.
I love that part. You're right. I just think it met its potential. All right.
Mm-hmm. So it's right where it needs to be, probably.
Yeah, right where it needs to be. Let's say if it was a buy, sell, or hold on a stock, I'd hold it. How's that?
Yeah. Oh, I like that. I like the analogy, man. Well, thanks, Mark. I appreciate you being on the podcast. You have definitely shed a lot of light on everything, right? You know, I mean, you're very broad, you know, but in the financial industry, I think I would call you a GOAT, you know, greatest of all time, kind of thing, man. You know. And so, you know, I think that you have a lot of knowledge, man, and continue to do what you're doing, right? You know, you're educating the masses, you know, but the most important thing, right, you know, you think about fiduciaries, you think about people who are not, right, you know, who are stealing kind of the money, right? You know, you think about people who are not, I mean, what you're doing is really creating that trust, you know, in the industry, because a lot of times people don't do that, right? You know, you sit there and you're like, look, I understand the problems you're going through. I understand the money. I understand the finances and stuff like that. And not only am I, you can trust me with your money, but I'm going to educate you on things, right? Mm-hmm. You know, educating is important because I trust somebody more, me personally, that somebody can educate me on things where I understand, like, hey, you're not biased at all, right? You know, you're really just trying to be, I look at it, if I can equate you to like an engineer, right? You know, most engineers are not that biased, right? Mm-hmm. You know, majority of the time we're not trying to sell you something.
Right.
We truly, genuinely want you to survive and be great, you know, in what you're doing, you know?
Look, so either that bridge is going to stand up or it's going to fall. And it's not like, you know, we can have an opinion about it. It's either a structural bridge or it's going to collapse on itself. Yeah. Well, thank you for those kind words. That's very kind of you. And if it's okay, maybe I'll just share where folks can hear more and then we'll.
Yeah, definitely, man. So where can they hear you? Where can they reach you at? And where can they hear some more information? Or is there anything that you're promoting right now? Book, anything like that, conference or anything?
Well, you've done a great job and you've pulled some interesting thoughts. I didn't think I'd be talking about Plinko boards when I started the conversation today, man. So thanks for your great conversation. You're a great interviewer, a great conversationalist. So thanks, keep up man. The great podcast and great work. Everybody give Bobby five stars because, you know, you do a great job on this.
Thanks.
If folks want to have further conversation or just explore some strategies using the law of large numbers to your advantage in your financial life, I can help. I work with clients all over the 50 states, and you can reach me at kickstartwithmark.com. That's kickstartwithmark.com. And we can have a quick 15-minute phone conversation, see what's a good fit.
Okay, great. And are you doing anything right now with Lake Growth?
Yeah, Lake Growth is my company. I'm the owner of Lake Growth Financial Services. But I'll tell you the very best, you can go to lakegrowth.com and find my calendar there too. But if you want to get my podcast, if you want to get connected on social. If you want to see all my stuff, go to the one website I'd say to remember is kickstartwithmark.com.
Okay. Our company website. Sure, is this it right here?
Oh, yeah, that's it, man. Yeah. Wait, hey, well, that's impressive. Look at this guy doing
man.
It.
Don't worry about
kickstartwithmark.com. Right on. Yeah. Well done.
Well, hey, look, Mark, again, I appreciate everything that you're doing for the community, for everybody out there, and just keep up the good work, man. You know, if you need anything from me, you always know you can reach out to me. And audience, thank you for listening to Data is My Science podcast. Again, I am Dapper Data, okay? Soon to be Dr. Dapper Data, right? Hopefully this year and stuff, you know, so I'll change all that. You know, follow my podcast. Definitely subscribe if you can. I would love for you all to interact and definitely try to come up with new ideas, right? New podcasts, things like that, you know? So thanks again, Mark. Man, audience, I love you all. Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Data is My Science podcast, the show that makes data your passion, with your host, Dapper Data.